Is this just like this was their first idea for Sanguinius?
Horseback scan initiated. I'm picking up a podcast arriving. Wait. Designation: Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. We are the Bell of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined tonight by Tanya Gates.
Oh, hello everybody.
Adam Camilleri.
Oh, hello.
And Red Powell.
Hello.
What's up everybody?
How's it going?
Yeah, doing pretty well. Good. Yeah, yeah. We're fresh off the Warhammer Fest week. I enjoyed that digital format.
Yeah, I didn't mind it either. I mean, I wish, people got to go to these things and enjoy them and, you know, buy specialist stuff, shelves and stuff. But as far as, you know, having to do it like this goes, this was pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I liked getting the daily dose of, like, being able to, even if I couldn't see it live, which I normally try to tune in for those things, but a couple of days I couldn't see it live. But then shortly after, you just see this deluge of really cool pictures.
Yeah. And no, for me, it was really nice, like, waking up 5 days in a row to be like, what came out overnight? What, you know, what did Santa leave under the tree this morning?
For me, it's really hard to consume content because listeners here probably don't know, but I make content on a lot of different platforms. So for me, I just really can't devote the time to watching the release streams, but I always, like, am on tenterhooks as I wait for the Warhammer community articles to go up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I love seeing all the pretty pictures and stuff.
That is cool. They just released the high def pic. Don't hold anything back. It's like, this is the live thing. Now tune in and get your fix, which is cool. Like, we can talk about some of the pre-show. We haven't even talked about the orc stuff, I don't think, on the last show. But
that's
then we
right,
had some
yeah.
detail on the Blood Knights.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so I would like to talk about all that kind of stuff. Well, I don't know where we want to start. Maybe the orcs?
Yeah, we should start with the orcs.
We should.
They look big and burly. That's so with that, there's been some comparisons to the orcs with their,
the
but
angels,
I think it's,
yeah.
I mean, with their like bulk and scale and maybe a little bit of primitive armor, I can see that.
Yeah, and the fact that they've got their, you know, gore grunters versus squeak grunters kind of aesthetic going on, even some of the posing on some of the riders and the mounts looks quite similar. But I just think it's cool. I don't think they needed to do this, so to speak. Like, I've got a feeling this is like Primaris orcs. You know, these are scaled up.
They are Primorcs.
Primorcs. You know what I mean? So they're making a new, you know, they're kind of making a skewed new range of orcs without having a, you know, having to pull out a whole new range of orcs and either invalidate other people's collections, but, you know, give people a worthy alternative with some incredible miniatures, which I'm wholeheartedly behind. Or what I'm not behind is the pig aesthetic. What? Why not rhinoceros? You know?
Yeah.
Why pig?
Well, the you squigs, know, you know.
Rhinos, hippos, crocodiles, hell, Tasmanian devils. But why a pig? I'm just like head scratching a little bit.
The squig look has, I mean, it's got its trappings and kind of the way it's been for a while now. And I think, and I said this, you know, when we saw the original one, I think these are painted in a way that look kind of primitive, but they're really going to shine, I think, when some painters start getting them in their hands and painting them up for their specific clan cultures.
That's true.
Like that the bones don't have to be bones. They could easily be blue or checkerboard or whatever. I mean, there's...
Well, I think this is the first time I've seen white used as a primary color on an orc model.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, I've never seen white really used on any of them, except for like for dags and checks on Goss. That's pretty much it. But this is used to like, we have actual full panels of white on the majority of the models that they've shown us so far.
Maybe that's
why. I find that interesting.
Yeah, it keeps me looking at it. I mean, not because it's so different. And I'm thinking that, man, that really needs to be, you know, Evil Sons. You know what I mean? Or bad boots or whatever.
Maybe that's the clan. Maybe that is the clan symbol. They have a splash of white. Or maybe it's I can't really make out from I'm looking at the single picture on the Warhammer community roundup of it. And maybe it's a cream or an off-white or whatnot. But yeah, it looks like that is their symbol. So maybe that is the thing, the panel that would be red if you were Evil Suns or orange or yellow for bad moons.
Yeah, it could be. And they were careful to point out in the when they were talking about it that these aren't snake bites. These could be I think anything.
Now, this is gonna strain everybody, but you see the war boss on the squig with the battering ram head, who was a kid and who loved their dinosaurs. Who can tell me what dinosaur that was modeled after?
Is this the Diplodocus? Is that it?
No.
You sure it's not the Diplodocus?
Ankylosaurus?
Ankylosaurus.
No, it's the head, the head buddy one. Who knows the name of it?
I'm going to stick with the Diplodocus.
I know the name of it, but I can never pronounce it.
Does it start with a D and end with Diplodocus?
It starts with a P. So it is a Pachycephalosaurus.
That totally sounds like you didn't make it up.
Pachycephalosaurus. I knew the name of it in my head, but I could never pronounce it, so I googled it. Pachycephalosaurus. It means thick-headed lizard in Greek.
Oh, nice.
Which makes sense. And I like that they did that for the aesthetic for this dude. In fact, that's what I wish they were doing with the squeaks. I wish they were doing like dinosaur squeaks. Because we kind of lost that when the Crute Range, unfortunately, rest in peace, the Forge World Crute Range, where we lost all the big dinosaur Crute things. There is a big gap for dinosaur, you know, somewhere in the model ranges. And we could have like squig dinosaurs, because we kind of got that. That's kind of what the squiggets are. And we kind of bridge the gap between little fuzzball of anger, or, you know, blob ball of anger, to like giant squiggeth, and in the middle we have our, you know, our velociraptor squiggies, our, you know, all different sizes, maybe, you know, more chunky, fatter, but get that aesthetic going. That would be cool, like a stegosaurus squig. I just want Dino Riders. I just want Dino Riders in 40k. I want Dino Riders in 40k. Putting it out there. Sorry.
No, it's okay. Look, you got an IV squig. There's a squig the pain boss. I don't mind the look of these things. I do think that they're like the way the paint job. This is one of those to where the paint job is a certain look to them, and I think it's I do think it's cool. But I'm going to stand by these things are going to absolutely just jump off the table when folks start putting on their own look to them to fit into their current orc army. If people want to use them, I think though that these squig riders look cool, and if they are designed for like taking out fast moving, can take out vehicles and stuff, then they might be a popular choice.
How do you guys feel about the weird boy they showed off, the one with the blue hair?
Didn't they say it was a runt herder or something?
Zogrod. Yeah, it lifts off it's a runt herder. You're right. Sorry, apologies. For some reason I assumed it was because he got a big staff. That was a weird boy.
Well, he's got the crazy hair. And I mean, this could easily be a kitbash for our weird boy.
Yeah, how do we feel about that one? I'm on the fence about it. I think I'll have to wait until I see it in person.
Is this a legacy character that like used to exist and is now
making
a grand reveal? I don't know that that's true. I'm trying to remember what I heard from the preview.
Ah, you're right. So Zogrod, a word snagger, is an infamous orc run herd who was perhaps the greatest orc run herd in history before being expelled from the war boss Ulgerhard Duffgrunter's charges. An extremely fundamental band of snake bites who rapidly rejected the use of advanced technology. There we go. This isn't OG. This is an OG run herder. He's actually a character from back in the back day.
He had
an old model with blue hair, like first press orc, space orc model, freebooter mercenary leader Zogrod. Wow.
I like how his weaponry is like completely cobbled together. Like I think that's a flamer from a combi flamer or something. It's got if you look closely, that looks like a combi flame, a pistol with a medical injector on it. And then that's a power claw with a almost like a Skaven staff.
Yeah,
Harud staff.
Mm. So I wasn't sold on the model until I knew it was a legacy model. And now I think it is gorgeous and could do no wrong.
My favorite thing about this model is that all of that hair is like stapled to his face.
It's punched in there. He's just clipped it on. He looks at it, gets up in the morning, puts his wig on. He's like, going to shine today, babies. Let's go do it.
He's got extensions.
Clip-in extensions, thank you very much.
Orcs can't grow hair. That's where the squigs come in. They have hair squigs.
Yep. Symbiotic organism.
This is an impressive attention to detail here.
Mm-hmm.
And then what I just noticed the bionic leg he's got.
Yeah, he's got a bionic leg as well. And there was the pain boss that had both bionic legs. I'm just imagining him just sitting down after a long day, his legs hurt. He's like, you know what would be great? Looking down at his knees and being like, Do you know what would be really great, guys? He just picks up a hacksaw, looks at his, like, guy.
This is looking pretty strong. And then the little, what is it, the Gretchen on the tiny squig?
He's got like a little nail or something as a weapon. It's a bomb squig, right? It's got a little bomb strapped to him.
Let's see what it says. Is that that may just be a jet. Maybe a, I don't know what that is.
Who are we looking at?
The tiny Gretchen on the squig with what appears to be a Storm Boy rocket.
He has a rocket strapped to his back and it's on a wheel. So cool.
It says, this doesn't stop many of the Beast Nagasgrots from being used for classically creative orc, quote, engineering, however. Particularly unlucky types might find themselves as the, quote, brain in a new breed of smart weapon accompanying the Squig Hog Boys. Kind of sounds like it's a bomb squig.
I would think it's safe to expect that that is a bomb squig.
I would. So there's so many. There are so many of this kind of thing. Like every time they bring out a new kit, G Dub makes two or three little fluff or homage pieces that are just there for the lulz. Like when you buy a mech gun, you get six little grots, and they're all, you know, in some other facet of crazy stance. Or one of them's got a huge welding helmet on that looks far too big for his body. All these other little bits and pieces. I would love to see an army of just that stuff. Like maybe like an Armies on Parade diorama of just all the wacky, ridiculous little posed grots and orcs doing all the nonsensical stuff that they put on these little bespoke models.
And the sassy nurglings.
Sassy nurglings.
It's the crazy grots fighting the sassy nurglings. Oh my God.
but question, if they give a quote brain to a bomb squig, does that mean that it becomes less random?
I'm pretty sure that they've decided it is a brain, and then they want to get rid of it as soon as possible. I clicked around until I found the Pain Boss figure. This thing is, I don't know, I'm loving this figure. I'm loving the orc stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm in love with that war boss though. The new Megarama war boss. I think he was the favorite for me out of this.
Yeah.
Really? What's speaking to you about that?
Look at him.
Fair enough.
Yeah. The power of the pose. How the armor looks good, but it's not all covering. That's one of my I think that's one of my only gripes with the past Megarama. I said that wrong. Megarama knobs. It was that there was too much armor. I wanted a bit more skin to paint because they're orcs. And so this guy, I feel like he's got the tightrope right in the middle where you've got enough skin that the skin still pops, but the armor still looks imposing and powerful. And I like that he's got like a super big chopper. He actually feels like the Lord of Contagion. He feels to me like the Lord of Contagion from not the Indominus box, the one, the Dark Imperium box.
Yep.
At the start of 8th edition. He's got the big man reaper and he's just this chunky, solid looking bar on the table. And you've got this guy, I feel like he's a nice little counterpoint to that. And the grot on top with the big shooter or whatever is just hilarious.
I like that actually.
I mean, it's flat up there. You can put a guy can stand up there. You can have a gun, chuck him up there.
This boss is probably bigger than the Meganovs, but the Meganovs also, they've got that little shelf up there.
They do.
Might as well put a grot with a big shooter up there.
Why not?
I really just like the two-handed weapon. I think it looks awesome. It makes him look menacing. It's just, yeah, I love everything about this model. And his face is so, like, terrifying to look at. I just love it. To me, when I think about orcs from, like, lore, like from the Beast Arises series, like, that's how I see orcs.
It's got that little twist in the jaw, like he's screaming something, like, specific, like he's saying something or...
Yeah, he's saying, wah.
Could be.
That's what he's saying. Yeah.
Or he's shouting to his buddy up there.
It does kind of look like he's shouting back.
I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting to see how these new orc models plug into existing armies and how it plays out. You know, like if is the buggy still going to be a list that people can build? Like, how does this all come together? Looks like the orcs are getting a ton of new options.
How do you guys feel about the palette change, the color palette change on the skins from G-Dub? It started, the greens really changed over the years. I don't know, you guys have probably noticed as well, but I remember, was it the Black Reach or McCrag, the box set? And I remember the green out of that. Just to see how far they've come with the usage of their greens and how they're applying it and stuff. It's actually incredible to think.
It just looks a little, it looks really natural with the addition of like the pinks and stuff in places, like in the highlights and stuff.
Yeah. It's got a real nice kind of blue green in the recesses as well.
Adds a lot
to make it feel like it's alive.
That's an interesting point. I just clicked through to the boys, like the orc boys do have a distinct different color palette to their skin than the Ruckatruck squig buggy pilots.
That's when it started. And the aesthetic of the faces really changed as well. There's less comical faces and more this brutal savage like face on. I'm looking at the Rammy Rammy Squig boss guy now, and his face just looks calm. I'm gonna mess you up. I'm a brutal savage big boy. You got nothing on me. I like that a lot, rather than a we're orcs, let's get them boys, kind of what we used to have.
I think that's a huge shift for me, honestly. Like, I've kind of, something about the goofiness of orcs, and don't get me wrong, that's something that honestly, like, people have been in love with. There's something to the orc aesthetic and culture that you know people love orcs, right? Like, you know, when you've got an orc player around, because it's their thing. And I'm happy for them that they've got something that they like and that they've enjoyed it. And I don't mean to say that, you know, I'm glad that they're moving away to whatever extent. I don't think that's the case, but I really do like this add-on aesthetic. I don't think they're moving away. I think that they're adding on. And I think that this add-on is, I mean, we're talking like Mad Max-ish almost, right? Like, between the buggies, and then you add on. So, like, I was looking at some of them, even the guys riding the squigs. I kind of feel like, you know, so if you watch the first Mad Max movie, it's and Adam, I know, like, I imagine, you know, you're very in tune with Mad Max, right? Because of it's like cultural heritage.
Right? I grew up very close to where they filmed the first one. So
there you go. Continue. So, like, you know, and the first one is not as out there as the others, right? It's like the whole world hasn't just gone completely downhill. It's obviously got some. But so I kind of feel like
they had a different budget.
They sure did, right? They sure did. And so there's something to that. But really, these guys have really gone native almost to that extent, right? Like, it's crazy how much. And I really like the look of them, and to take in the HQ that was featured and the overall look of the troops that they showed. I assume those are troops, the boys, the kind of feral looking. And then, you know, as was mentioned with the Oryx from Age of Sigmar, what's really stopping you from bringing those guys in and mixing them in with all of these amidst the rest
of plastics.
Them?
Like, I bet some of those bits will swap easy.
I think it's going to look great. I think it's really good. I'm really looking forward to what people are going to bring on the table as far as that goes. You know, talking about combining in the buggies and all that, I think this will all go together very well. I think it's going to look great on the table.
That's what it's all about. My favorite war boss of the modern era, I just used air quotes. I know it's terrible for the radio. Awesome. but it's that came out of the starter set, the guy with the power claw and the combi rocket. I think he's up now as the orc war boss. Grux boss mob. This was on the not Assault on Black Reach, but the, was it Black Reach?
So he came out in Black Reach. The original one came out in Black Reach. Then they kind of did the revamped Grux Face Ripper that came out in a box with some Space Wolves guys. He had the guy with the power axe. His name was Redmane. And they came out together. I remember buying that Grux model and starting an orc army off that model because I loved it so much.
Yeah.
I feel like the Mega Armor guy is just like the next version of that guy. He's like chunked up, he's bigger, he's bolder. And it's the same thing that I loved about Grux and made me want to run out and buy him is making me run around and buy this Mega Armor war boss as well.
Do we all have orc armies?
Nope. Maybe. I do not.
I do have an orc army, yeah.
I actually gifted mine to a friend who wanted to start one but found it too intimidating. And my orc army had been sitting doing nothing for upwards of 3 years. So I just kind of passed it on to him. Just been like, aww, hey, dude, if these will get you started, off you go. Go for it.
So just like, what's your favorite clan?
Mine was Goths and nice. Blood Axes.
Nice.
Because I'm a guard player, Blood Axes, of course. So.
Evil Sons for me.
Nice. Yeah, like mine are Death Skulls, but Goths are my very close second.
I mean, of course, I'm a cheesy, filthy meta chaser, so I have some bad moods as well.
I was going to say, you know, Tanny, you want to hear what my favorite one is?
What's that?
The Dead Ones.
Nice.
The Dead Ones?
Like, it's spoken like a true...
Oh, it hurts me.
We can talk about these guard heads. The Acadian accessory sprue.
Actually, sorry, I want to revise my answer because Red's answer was much better than mine. My favorite is whichever clan Power Claw belongs to Yarrick's arm. Whoever that guy's clan was.
That's the Goths, right?
Yeah, isn't it? I think it's Goths.
Yep. All right. Well, my answer was the same.
Yeah. In true orc fashion.
Everybody's time.
That's okay. That's okay. Well worth the jab. No, but the Cadian accessory sprue. I'm digging some of these. I'm digging all the heads, but I guess specifically I like how some of these will go well on catechins.
Yeah, I'm on the fence about it. I'll wait until I see it. I like that guard got something, honestly, guys. I feel like the Cadian range does need an update, and if they weren't going to update it, this is the next best thing. So no problems whatsoever.
But do you really want the scale messed with? Like, what are you missing that you think out of the Cadian range?
I just want some more stances. I went out of my way when I did my Cadians. I spent a ludicrous amount of money and got them all the Forge Wielder respirator kits and upgrade kits and veteran kits. And then I've spent an even more exorbitant amount of money getting a bunch of kneeling guys. I've got 100 guys and 50 of them are kneeling and 50 of them are standing, so I can first rank, second rank the whole platoon, the whole battalion. But the only place you get kneeling legs, you get one of them in the command, the 5-person command one, or you get 6 of them out of the heavy weapons teams. Mm-hmm. So I bought 50 guys worth of heavy weapons teams. And all that.
This is some tech for anyone that's going to be starting a guard army is don't glue your people on the heavy weapons bases. Put them on the base, put them on their own individual bases, and then you can occasionally use them as,
regular dudes. That's what I ended up doing. And it was a ridiculous effort. I'm very proud of myself for doing it. Never going to do anything like that ever again. But when people start a guard army, and you look at how many guardsmen you might need, 100 is not outside the realms of possibility. And when you look at the same, Cadian kit, being like, hey, there actually isn't that much variety in this 10-man. For some people out there who really love the modeling aspect of what they're doing, some variety is just good. It just makes you more willing to get stuck in and get 100 of these guys.
Well, I mean, they're on the table for 10 minutes. What's...
Yeah. I'm completely the opposite. Well, I mean, all of my Cadians have Skitarii Vanguard heads on them, but I kind of like the idea of them being like nameless, faceless, just like cannon fodder, there's more where that came from, that's kind of how I approach my army. While I think that this variety is really cool for the people who really want that, it's I got so many messages that day of people like, oh, did you see it? Are you gonna buy it? Like, nah, I'm gonna just beg, borrow, and plead for more Skitarii Vanguard heads.
I do think these are cool though. I mean, look.
They are really cool. Yeah.
So I think that there's some. I mean, I always love the ability to adapt trying to think of a good way to say this. I mean, kit bashing is awesome, right? And honestly, my Tanith build, I have Cadians and I have Catechin and I have Tanith models and I have Necromunda models, like all wrapped into it. So I think it's a great add-on. Would I love like more stuff? I can't complain because there are Tanith models. So while I regret that they didn't make Catechin and like full-out Cadian kits and everything for you guys, I'll take what I can get. And I'm sorry, maybe next time for you.
You know what? I am really down with like the full-on respirator helmet. Like he's got the glasses.
That's a cool look. That's a well-equipped guardian.
That's what all my boys are.
Yeah, the last guard deal that came out, I thought they did an amazing job with the last guard codex, the Astra Militarum, right? Because they showed a lot of the different, they showed a ton of different regiments. And they looked at like using Gene Stealer Colt heads and all sorts of stuff to really make these different models. I thought they did an amazing job of showing some different looks. To the respirators, I think there are some amazing respirators that you can get, especially now that you're looking at like Necromunda models and everything. They did a really good job of bringing some of that stuff out.
They mentioned here that you can give your sergeant the bolt gun they've always wanted. I like how
that's Yeah. My favorite. Sorry, go.
No one legitimately cares whatever when anything that's on a guard sergeant. I mean, there was a brief time when like power axes on them was really cool, and you know, I guess you could put a plasma pistol on some.
Yeah, when you get AP2 on them, you run a, I used to run a blob of like 60-70 dudes with 6 power axes in there. That was cool.
I just don't know that I've ever put a bolt gun on them.
It used to be 1 point. And whenever I'd have like, you know, 3 points left at the end of the thing, I'm like, oh, well, I guess every sergeant gets a bolt gun. Congratulations, boys.
I'm definitely.
Your arms will be jelly.
And a bolter on my commander because, you know, why not?
Mm. Why not? That's right.
I figured it was a point of pride. Like he just carries around this ridiculous Marine power fist because he, you know, it's like the conch shell, you know. I guess very similar to Orky stuff, but I do really like the sniper rifle bit here.
I love that people are saying that it looks like a super soaker, like you have to like pump it.
That's
to
what I was gonna climb. Say. The pumping is cool.
It does.
It does.
Wow. Nothing new there. Nothing new.
I mean, I'm even fine with the super soaker references.
I mean, look at most right. of the flamers.
Let's take a break. And there's a few things we want to do on this episode. So you don't want to miss, tune back in right after the break. We'll see you in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
We are back. We have to talk about some of these Sigmar reveals.
Yep.
As we barrel into the new edition.
Stormcast or vampires?
Oh.
It's a tough one.
I almost feel bad for, like, because anytime I think I'm able to say that 40K has gotten a good new model, I'm like, oh yeah, but Age of Sigmar got like 5 good new models. They are going from strength to strength to strength.
The fantasy line has always had a beautiful models, though.
Mm.
It's true.
What about the crab from the Warhammer Underworlds? Man, like, it's so cute.
I love, so, like, everybody's, like doing these Drukhari, like, is this my new Archon kind of deal? And someone did that with the crab, so and I laughed so hard. So funny.
Crab meta, everybody. Get on it.
I like there's like a meme out there that like guys only want one thing and it's gross and it's like the crab.
Oh, that's awesome. Meta. These Stormcast, is this the second or third kind of wave of Stormcast release we've had? Because we had the original come out. It was the Retributors and the Sword and Shield guys, and then the Judicators, the Archers. And whatnot. And then we had the Cav, and then we had the kind of leaner, sleeker ones come out. There were the evocators and the we joked in saying they were the Chocobo Riders, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that was the kind of second wave. I feel like this is the third wave. This might be the second wave though. They might have been just a little mini one in the middle. But these guys, they look really nice. They just put it out there, really nice. And I'm not just saying that as somebody looking through a 40K lens. Aesthetically, I can't poke many holes. Maybe the heads are not to my taste. Everything else is just plain beautiful.
These vaults are not going to release themselves.
That's true. Tanya, you loved the chunker, didn't you? You like the big boy.
I do. Yeah. Like even like, is it like a lion or something that's like in his breastplate? Oh, it's so beautiful.
Check that shield.
We're talking about the annihilators. They're the new generation of paladins for this wave. What were you saying, Paul? The shield.
Yeah, the shield. He's holding that shield. You know, it's down there, and just the magnificence of it.
I do like a chonky boy, though. I don't know what it is about like a model that just takes up space. Maybe it's because like my first true army love was my Ogre Maw Tribes. I like a chonky model, and he's gorgeous.
That hammer, I mean, it looks dangerous. And then just the whole like the, I don't know if is that a whole, you get this whole unit of those things. Is that what the impression you're getting?
Yes.
Yeah. I think they pretty much said that, haven't they?
Yeah. I think they are like, I mean, they're like Stormcast Terminators. Mm. And honestly, like between that hammer and some things you can probably, I bet you different poses like that one with the shield's kind of specific, but some of those things you could change around. I mean, I think this thing screams Imperium. And then when you start considering like Terminator conversions or custodes or what have you, I mean, these guys are, I think they're pretty awesome.
Oh yeah, you slap a Guardian Spear.
Yeah.
You know, on that thing. Yeah. I'm down. I mean, not that he, you know, it's not cool enough to, as it is, but I love seeing all this stuff in plastic. It just opens up the kitbash potential.
Absolutely. Well, any you could insert these guys for any Gravis armor. We'll have to see what the scale is like. But, you know, aggressors, inceptors, if you wanted to, eradicators. You could just do your own kind of bespoke Terminators as well if you wanted to. Admittedly, though, if these guys are as big as like Custodes, there might be some scaling issues. But as long as they're on the right bases, like most people won't care, right?
I've been playing around with TTS with a small patrol of Custodes with my guard. And if it's something I decide to go forward with, these guys, if they're Custode size, I'm doing it because, yeah, the Custodes models don't really do it for me, but these guys do.
What?
Yeah, I don't know. Their helmets are kind of goofy.
Tease their own. But we can't not talk about this, the winged model.
Oh, yes.
Was it Andrasta?
Yeah, yep. Andrasta. That's her name.
I love how many versions of gorgeous wings they've got now.
This effect on white, I learned, you know, kind of how that blue, you can use blue to shade white.
Yeah, is it owl-like? It feels like an owl wings, the aesthetic, yeah?
Oh, that's a good comparison.
That's what I thought when I saw it. I love the white gold on the for the armor as well. It plays off the blue beautifully.
It's a huge difference from the Retributor armor that we see on everything else. This is it looks older, it looks a little bit more patinaed.
I think it looks ethereal.
Oh, yeah. That could be what they're going for too.
Because isn't she supposed to be like some sort of avatar or something like that?
She's one of it's kind of interesting. We just had a new High Lord of Terra dropped. She is in the vein of one of those. She's like one of the 12 people that works for ranking leaders that works for Sigmar. You know, the god of mankind.
So it reads here, a beast slayer beyond compare, Andrasta has been tasked with hunting down the most terrible monsters found in the mortal realms, carried into battle on angelic wings and wielding a legendary spear, then Gravar. Yeah, her mere visage strikes terror into the enemies of Azir. Well said. And man, those spears, I think we said this off camera, is this just like this was their first idea for Sanguinius? Then they're like, we thought they went and they made this instead. I do think, yeah, the wings are really a really unique aesthetic for the wings. I don't think there are any other wings quite like this in 40k or Age of Sigmar. Sorry.
No, those are massive. And the way they're swooped up like that, yeah, kind of frames the whole model.
Yeah, it's a beautiful model. And it's posed so simply. I feel like the steps, or you know, depending on how you feel about the diorama elements, it could be too much for you or not. But the fact the model would be just fine just on the base, you could build up whatever you wanted around it. It would suit kind of whatever you wanted to go for. Big fan.
Yeah, I'm digging it. What do you think this is going to bring in the new edition, though? I mean, like, this is all we haven't seen a whole bunch yet.
Yeah, I don't have any insights to that. Maybe Tanya's got something to speak to or read, but yeah, I'm not quite sure what to expect from the new edition.
I'm not really too sure what to expect either. Like, I know that there's been a lot of people sort of speculating on the internet and all that, but I think that they're going to approach it like they did between 8th and 9th, and it'll be similar but refined. That's what I think.
So, I mean, I'm really excited because what's happened in Age of Sigmar has kind of followed suit into 40K, right? So like the command phase and command points and how those things have worked out. And we've seen that kind of play itself into Warhammer 40K. And so I'm really excited to see what they come up with in regards of Age of Sigmar. And I know, you know, reading through the comments, there's a lot of discussion about the balancing issues in Age of Sigmar. So I'm interested to see if maybe this new edition does something. You know, if GW likes the way that their game is designed, then that's one thing. And, you know, I totally understand there might be opinions in regards to balance, and I'm not disagreeing with those by any means. And so it's always interesting to see how, when a new edition drops, like how the game developers and the rule writers, you know, what did they listen to? What did they think needed to be adjusted in order to make it a better game? Because that's honestly it, right? Like that's why they're doing it for the edition. They're trying out new modes, new rule sets, new mechanics, and so on and so forth. So I'm really interested to see where that goes. And I also would love to see this. They talked about Fields of Glory, and I've always been interested in the narrative and the construct of, you know, Crusade, for example. Not a huge fan of 40K's Crusade. Really interested to see what they do with Age of Sigmar. You know, fortunately, my Khorne models transfer right over from 40K to Age of Sigmar, so I can do that. But
it's
I do
the best
have
thing about having a demon army.
Oh yeah, no, it's awesome, and so I do have that. But I'm also I have a an old Dark Elf army and an old vampire army, and so especially with the new Grave Lords as they've come out, I'm really interested to see what that looks like and how I can jump on that, because you know we talked about the other models that were previewed. Man, these these Blood Knights, I mean, they look, you know, we've talked about them before already. We've talked about just how good they look, and they showed them a little bit more, I'd say. And they've really highlighted them as they're going on pre-order here in a couple of days. You know, probably by the time this releases, they'll have already gone on pre-order. And I it's hard to say that I'm not going to get any, because I'd love to see what was previewed today even.
There's stats, some of their stats. They're, I mean, yeah, at least some of their stats, not their stats, their rules.
And you can make a whole army of just Blood Knights. It's like its own like vampiric dynasty, which is a holdover from the world that was, you might say. And I'm really excited to see that. I love the idea of the Blood Knights and what they had and everything. And so the fact that it's not just, rightfully so, you know, it's not just the Von Karsteins or anything. There's five, at least I saw five different. So I'm really, I really want to get my hands on this book. I'd love to talk about it some more, but talk about speculation. I really just need to see what's in it.
Well, I like the idea that these knights can ignore some models. I mean, that's the old, there was, it's kind of weird. The skeletal horses could run through terrain like it didn't exist.
Oh yeah. The hex in the day. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the back in the day, the they weren't the Black Knights or whatever, but they were skeletons riding skeletal horses. They could phase through terrain and stuff
that. Sure. Yeah.
And it seems like they might get some similar rules here.
Yeah. Yeah, it does look like they have some stuff. I mean, that so that's cool. They're hardier. They've got a lot going on for them, and they look amazing. And I honestly, I saw a GW like, you know, how to paint video that a lot of, you know, honestly, I see those things and it's kind of like, you know, you don't always have the time to review those, but I do. I save them on Facebook and then I go back and look at them later. And I love how the Blood Knights have turned out, and I'm really excited to get my hands on some.
I just remember back in the day when the first Blood Knights came out, all their metal on square, small square bases.
We've
glory
talked
before
about them,
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we talked about them ages ago and be like, hey, they were like revolutionary at the time and broke people's brains and at how gorgeous and amazingly awesome they were. I just like that these feel like these feel just as good and just as impactful to, you know, what can be done with miniatures and how good you can make something look and something feel on the table. G-Dub just smashing it. I wish I had, I feel like I'm fanboying a little bit too much during this Warhammer Fest, but doesn't matter. It was, everything was awesome.
And well, think about just how much content we got. I mean, we've milked it for two episodes.
Yeah, that's true.
But actually it's not where, I mean, I think this is the appropriate amount, like the respect and love on these models, because they're epic's not even the best word for them, but I think that's what they are. And to think that there's just like, these are whole new sections of armies or whole new armies or, you know, figures we've never, you know, we never seen figures this good before from an undead range, in any range, if you ask me.
Totally agree.
And I happen to like that look too. I mean, no secret, but I like the kind of the dark and creepy vampire type stuff.
That's why we're here, man.
don't worry, the crabs are cool too.
That and crabs. Yeah.
Massively if there was an army of just crabs, yeah, I'd be all over that.
I don't know where you would go about getting deep can. Yeah, I don't know where you would go about getting enough crabs the right size to do an all crab deep can army, but surely there'd be some ways and means out there.
Hit up the aquarium store.
I like the idea of the eel riders just being on lobsters instead of eels, and then one giant like mud crab instead of the turtle. And yeah, that's got to have one big. It's got to have one big claw and one little claw, and you got to
maybe the turtle should be like a horseshoe crab though.
Oh, that! Oh, holy crap! That's a great idea.
Right? Yeah. I like where we're going with this.
To go slightly back on topic, that rule we're talking about is the Riders of Ruin. In your movement phase, if this unit is within 3 inches of an enemy unit, it can make a normal move. If it does so, it can pass across other models with a wound characteristic of 3 or less that do not have a mount. In the same manner as models that can fly, After this unit has made a normal move, roll a dice for each enemy unit that is any models passed across by any models in this unit. On a 2+, that enemy unit suffers D3 mortal wounds. So it's not just the move thing. It's a certain amount of damage, a little insult to injury.
Yeah, they're trampling them. It's awesome.
Yeah. This is basically to be able to strike at quote-unquote safe targets, disrupting your opponent's plans. And then the Martial Fury. Add 1 to the damage characteristic of this unit's Templar lances or blades if this unit makes a charge move in the same turn. Mm.
So, like, is one of the criticisms of Age of Sigmar's imbalance that shooting is too good? I think that I've heard that, right? Like, shooting is just too powerful.
I mean, for some armies, that seems to be the case. I think that it's just like there's just these wide imbalances across the board that one army comes out and it's just like it's just so one-sided, and that there has been quite back and forth over exactly where and how the game is imbalanced.
So yeah, I lost touch with the game kind of halfway through their second edition, where they kind of righted it would have been their first edition, because kind of the indexes is what I call their first edition, where, you know, you had to act like a goofball on the next to your
the ravening hordes
in order to get special rules,
make your opponent laugh.
Yeah, have a big beard. Sorry, Tanya. Can't have that rule. Well, you can try. Sorry, I shouldn't say that.
I was going to say, you know what? I just would have to stop plucking out my beard, and then I'd be fine. Fine.
But I kind of lost touch with it there. But even then, there was such a big gap between the armies that could shoot and the armies that couldn't. An army that could shoot still kind of had melee units, but also just shot. And then there was armies that had no viable shooting whatsoever and just melee units.
I was just thinking, like, maybe these bonuses in the charge phase are just sort of like rewarding you for getting there.
Yeah. But anyway, that's, I'm sure Red can speak to it better than us, being the student of combatiness. But I believe that's his term. You know, we've done away with rules.
You keep going at him. I'm really enjoying this.
Yeah, I really want to see how this plays out.
But. You know, there was a reason that you wanted to be first to the fight, that you wanted to have the impetus going into the battle. There was a reason to charge. There was not a reason to just walk slowly at each other. It was a reason to get the charge. And it should be, I liked it as reflected.
I tend to try to play, you know, aggressive charging armies too. I like to get in there and mix it up. I think the movement, all the trappings around movement in the charge and the subsequent movement phase and angling them and blocking and tackling or, you know, whatever. Mm. I enjoy that aspect of it a little bit better than the shooting. And if that does anything that inches us closer to making that on equal footing, if it takes a new edition or if that's paid attention to the new edition, I think I'll consider it a positive change.
See, Red, it wasn't stupid.
No, that never said that.
Yeah, it is.
I'm not even sure what you said. I'm just kidding.
It's fine.
I'm kidding, of course. But so, do you think that's it? Or is charging armies? I mean, is that what the biggest hope for? Is to have it be a viable option? Our biggest hope, anyway.
Well, you know, it's always been a thing in 40K as well, where, you know, look at Shock Assault. Impetus for charging. It's always kind of been, well, and also it used to be, I mean, back in the day, there used to be initiative gains from charging. Like, yep. You know, you got to fight first if you made the charge. And sorry, now that is the case. Sorry. You get first selection unless there's, you know, fight first rules interactions. You get the charge, you get the first choice.
Yeah, you're referring to the used to be like rules that gave you +1 strength, +1 initiative and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
And you would go in initiative order in a combat phase.
Yeah, I like that being represented. Like, you know, the whole reason a horse is good in, you know, medieval warfare is because it enabled you to hit them before they hit you, or, you know, let things like lances and spears become far more effective.
Exactly. So the momentum aspect, there's a whole massive piece to it, right? It's not just the physical aspect. There's a mental aspect to being charged down by the momentum and weight behind a horse, you know, someone on horseback, and that everything that goes into that. It's such a big deal that, you know, you could actually see that in old fantasy, old Warhammer fantasy, when charges and how you could essentially collapse an entire formation by doing something like that. Yeah. I do think it's interesting, you know, some of the, like Tanya, you brought up the imbalances suggested by shooting. I think that that's a real thing. Like, you take into, if you've watched, like Warhorse or some of those, you know, anything like the, when it comes down to it, it's cavalry's great and all until effective firearms were created. And there's some, I mean, there's still something to mounted platforms, you know, people being on things and the mobility it provides, but, guns and firearms and weapon ranged weaponry is a real issue for that kind of deal. And so it's been interesting watching the balance work its way one way or the other in 40K, and knowing that I know Age of Sigmar has been working through it. And so it's a real thing. And when it comes to the real tactics of it, like, being on foot's cool. You know, I talked about last week about Terminators and whatnot being tank-like infantry. Being on foot is cool and all until you realize how much faster things can get around when they're mounted. Now, being on foot allows you access to certain places that mounted, you know, horses shouldn't be able, they can't go everywhere. They can get far enough and they can get there quickly, but at the same time, they're just not going everywhere. And so it's really interesting to see how the game designers decide to try and play this out, and how the combat plays itself out and what that means. Because honestly, there's historically been plenty of cases where the charge has meant something, like, as it should. And so that's where it's always interesting. Some of these armies, like Slaanesh, for example, or Emperor's Children, like the ability to fight at the same rate as anybody else, even if they were charged, like, that just goes to show how quick they are, right? And it really is unfortunate when, I guess it goes one way or the other. I mean, when it comes to the charge, that people feel like they've lost the advantage in the charge. You know, we kind of, there's something to that when we moved on from initiative values and into just charge order versus non-charge order. I mean, there's some combat aspects to that in the mechanics, but I'm not discrediting it by any means. It's definitely become its own thing.
I think you just blamed it all on the Caradon overlords, because they have.
I mean, there's, it's, I tell you what, you take, you know, being a huge fan of Berserkers myself, right? The ability to fight twice and the amount of movement that you gain in a complicated melee, you know, in the fight phase is a real deal. And I think people are seeing that to a large extent with the Drukhari, and people are realizing the ability to move in and out of combat and what that looks like that kind of mobility. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw that go forward, you know, obviously not speculating too far or anything, but the ability for Harlequins to do that, right? Because we used to have that, what did they have? That old universal special rule that allowed them to move in and out of combat.
Hit and run.
Hit and run. There you go. Perfect. Yeah. So, like, hit and run. And then even the Tau, right? Like, the ability to shoot, or to their jetpack ability to move after they shot, right? Like, that all that mobility is a huge deal. And so when we talk about it, charging horses and whatnot, that's it's a aspect of mobility that was granted, but really the mental aspect that comes with it too. I can't underscore that enough, that being able to move, get somewhere where someone didn't know you're going to be there, and then to just come bearing down on them is just such a big deal. So there you go, Adam. I alley-ooped for you. You did a great job kicking us off. You weren't wrong either. I'm not.
Yay!
There you go.
It's a festival. But you're absolutely right. There was two instances, and please forgive me, I'm not a student of history, but I do try and pay attention to some of the notable things. I remember, and this is just a line in Braveheart, where the English told the Scots, you know, in 300 years, no one had beaten an army that had heavy cav when the other army didn't have heavy cavalry. And then the Scots did it by having, like, massive tree-length spears. And then there's another one, I think it was Bannockburn in France, where the longbow was the deciding factor in beating a huge, like, mounted French army to a very foot-based British army. And that was just because, like, even then, like, the longbow had become a thing, a ranged weapon powerful enough to punch through and smash down, like, heavy armor, plate armor and stuff, and became a tipping point even back then. So that's, yeah, very, very interesting. It goes straight into what you were saying. Mm-hmm. Now, please, if any of those are incorrect, write in your corrections to Adam. Sorry, I was wrong. This doesn't exist at gmail.com.
Oh my gosh. You're supposed to say leave it in the comments. You have to appease the algorithm gods.
Oh, I forgot to ask people to subscribe. Subscribe and like and stuff. At least
give us an algorithm tick.
that was a great slide in there too, Paul. I appreciate it. Hit all the buttons, everybody.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's a great reminder. We've meandered onto it to finally asking for folks to subscribe.
Perfect.
We got there in the end.
That was the whole Shaggy Dog joke just to get us to this point here.
It was.
Changing a little bit is that this new Necromunda stuff coming out, the propaganda transfers were up for about 5 minutes before everybody bought them.
Dang.
I didn't even know they were up.
Yeah,
I know. I mean, there's no way I was going to be able to catch that. Those went so quickly.
If you wanted those types of things and could not get them, which a lot of people didn't, there is, you can download it and print it out on paper. And with minimal effort, you can get them to attach to any of your structures. And they'll have that paper feel to them and everything. So don't sweat it too hard if you can't get it, if the FOMO is strong, which I understand. I was like, oh, what do you mean I missed them? And then I remember, oh, wait, I've got these printed out already. I could just use them. Everything's going to be fine.
Nice.
Yeah. But I like using transfers with just a minimal amount of effort. You can make them look natural, blends, you know, sink right into the model. Great for shoulder pads. And so the posters on your Necromunda scenery, I could see you wanting to use them, or even for things like on your Gene Stealer cult, you know, tanks and things, IG stuff, that kind of stuff to use it. But, you know, the paper stuff works out pretty well. Just a little thin down glue or Mod Podge. I think it's Mod Podge. Sticks
like
it right. I mean, it's craft stuff that you can get for $2 for a jug. It goes right on the any kind of terrain that you want to use it on. But if you're lucky enough to get the transfers, use those because they look pretty cool.
Yeah, geez. I suppose it's no surprise that things are in short supply in the current world we live in. But even that, like when I heard about it, was shockingly fast.
And it seemed to go in an instant speed.
Yeah. Instant transmission all over that.
Yeah, nice. I know we're jumping around, but this week we also got notification of the Games Workshop US Roadshow.
Oh, no, this is exciting.
Warhammer Roadshow taking place in, what is it, Orlando, New Orleans, and Austin?
Yeah, and then, I think, yeah, it's interesting. They're all in kind of the Southeast.
Probably on the same highway.
Texas.
This is Roadshow.
And they're like one-off events too, you know. It's an interesting showing, I think, for GW and the environment that we're in right now.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see what they have.
Yeah, I think there's, you know, again, as this plays out, we know very little, but also talked about the Golden Demon coming back to Adepticon, and that was that was something that was planned for last year, but of course didn't get to happen. And that's a big thing. Like the Golden Demon over here is not, I don't know how it's existed for the last little bit, you know, but this is something that really brings out just some stellar paint jobs. And Adepticon is one of those places you can see that kind of thing. So it was really cool to also announce that they would keep that at Adepticon.
I mean, we saw the quality of paint that came out of the Ever Chosen. Do you remember that? Ever Chosen Paint Contest? Mm-hmm. And the Golden Demon brings out even more impressive work. So I am so excited to see what everybody's been up to. Plus, they've had so much time to work on their entries. It's just going to be amazing.
That's unless they're procrastinators. But actually, the people that win this are not procrastinators like us. They actually are putting in the time.
Yes.
But I love seeing it. And that's the talent, the creativity, and then the application of the skill. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to see how this plays out. That would be a really cool thing to look forward to in 2022.
This roadshow has like a finals, doesn't it? You qualify, and then was that alluding to them having an invitational at the end? I'm not sure if you guys if they alluded to that or not in the actual post.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah, that'll be exciting as well. If they're crowning, they've got a little circuit going, they'll crown like a GW champ or Whatnot for a Year. That'd be a nice little title. How do you guys feel about...
Well, okay, let me reread it. The first events will take place in Orlando, New Orleans, and Austin. The Warhammer 40,000 games will use the 9th edition rule set, and the Warhammer Age of Sigmar tournaments will be some of the first in the world to use the 3rd edition rule set they just announced.
That's exciting.
Then say... venues are amazing. And then, yeah, so going on Silver says, oh, you can buy Forge World stuff there also. So they're going to have like a full on, like, I guess what you might expect from GW events that we've had in the US, you know, in years past. Now we can say that in years past, since we've taken a year off. and then if you qualify for the finals, your games will take place at the brand new Warhammer store and cafe in Los Angeles.
Nice. Oh, yeah. So there is a qualifier. There is kind of a finals to this, which is, I think that just adds another element of fun to it.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. I mean, even if you can't make it to all of them, go jam at one of them.
Yeah, it's not going to be a big deal. If you can't make it to any, just go enjoy, be part of.
Yeah,
as long as you can do so safely, of course.
Yeah, well, yeah, right. Can't wait till we get more info on this. Yeah, you know, looking, you know, to me, you know, going to these events and taking part in these events, you know, even like, you know, the stuff we've been doing virtually, participating virtually, it's like it's part of the culture of what I like to experience from this hobby. And so just having any idea that we might, you know, see some kind of return to that normalcy in the future, it's really inspiring. I'm looking forward to being a part of it somehow.
Yeah. I just miss all my gaming friends so much.
And I've yet to make it to like the Grapevine, was it the Citadel?
The what?
The Citadel outside of Texas. Or sorry, outside of Dallas, I think it's in Grapevine, Texas.
Is that where Immortal Joe lives?
Is it?
Max in here. Bam, bam.
Got it. Got it. That's where the cafe is, right?
Yeah, yeah. The one, I think they call it the Citadel, and then, you know, they've got this other one opening up in LA. With, it looks like their grand opening is June the 12th.
Oh wow, it's like soon.
Oh,
yes. Yeah, I had no idea.
That's autumn. Awesome.
Yeah. I love theme. I also love theme coffees.
Nice.
You can get some cool swag there. You get some store founding dice.
Wait. So like over in the UK, they get beer, and over here we get coffee.
Puritans.
Okay. Anyway, continue.
I have 40 of those store opening dice that I got when the local store in the town I used to live in opened up, and they are some of my favorite dice that I own, and I they're kind of my special occasion dice. So weird how I don't know if anybody else does that, but yeah, how you use different dice for different things.
That's completely like okay.
Yeah, it is. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just interesting. It's an interesting thing that a lot of us happen to do.
In the past, I know I've mentioned this at least, but you know, I've had red dice for the red armored guys, black dice for the black armored, and gold dice for the gold armored guys. Except my gold dice rolled terrible. So even with a 2+ save, I couldn't. So I had to.
My gold dice also roll terrible. I don't know. Maybe it's a gold dice thing.
It could be. I had to abandon it. I got like, this thing's not working for me anymore. So now, yeah. I try not to care.
They were my first dice, and I was like, "These are so pretty," and they had never rolled well for me whatsoever. Dang, look pretty though.
I can't throw away dice. Something.
Oh
in
God,
me.
No!
I cannot ever get rid of. If I happen to pick up a die or buy a die, it's probably going to be mine to the day they put me in the ground.
That's what we'll do. If I outlive your pull, I'll come and just pour your dice bag.
Just
instead of throwing in a handful of dirt, pour your dice bag,
please. And look spitefully at anyone that's seemingly questioning what you're doing.
And then I'll get in, and then I'll get in after you and pick up all the ones that rolled from the back. And take them out. They don't deserve to be there. That's kind of messed up. I'm sorry.
What if he needs them for his leadership saves though?
Paul doesn't take leadership.
Morale is strong, immune to the effects of morale. But now I was doing a little arranging in my hobby area, and there's some dice. I'm like, do I need these dice? Like, yeah, the answer was yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
You always need more.
I would like, so people put coins over your eyes for the ferryman. I'd like to get someone to come up and put 2 6s in my eyes just so I pass my first 2 saves on the other side.
There you go. So the store founding dice roll pretty well, is what you're saying. We need some. Oh, we've gone off the rails. But that's okay.
Exactly where we meant to be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, look, this has been Like, all this stuff has been announced in the span of a week. This is a lot to talk about.
Yeah, huge week. Jeez. Yeah.
And now we wait patiently.
That's right.
Or impatiently for some of us.
Yeah, we're tapping waiting either way.
Yeah. Yeah. And they still managed to kick out a couple of rumors. Like, there was a rumor engine pick.
Damn.
Yeah, a lion head.
That's not a lion. I don't think that's a lion.
You don't think it's a lion?
I don't.
What do you think it is?
It's a puma. I have no idea. Okay. I haven't seen it.
All right, fine. Puma.
It's a bobcat. I haven't
seen it. Bobcat. What's the mix of a tiger and a lion? It's a liger.
Liger.
No, there seems to be, I don't know if it's a mane or, I mean, there's obviously the feathers from the arrows there, or quarrels. This could be bolts.
I'm going to go have a look at this. One sec.
It's not Seraphon, is it? Because Seraphon have like the skinks have the blow darts or whatever.
It looks, yeah, I was thinking something. It looks Sigmarish with the arrows.
That looks
there.
Like, that actually looks like one of the kind of panther wolf things that Sigmar, some of the Sigmarines ride. Sigmarites. I hope it's wanderers. I hope it's a wood elf. Some wood elves.
Oh, like, nice.
You know, because they're the portion of the elves that haven't kind of been redone. The Eitheneth, you know, could be seen as the dark elves. The high elves have been done. We're due for the wood elves. Bring them on. Let's do it.
I'm down.
Are
with
we
that.
Due for the wood elves? Don't they have the beetle and the tree that's spirits?
Still, that's Sylvaneth. They've diverged. There's the Sylvaneth, which is all the tree people.
Forest
literal.
Demons.
They're literal trees. And then there's the elves that live and are actually disliked. They flipped that relationship on its head, and now they're actually kind of, years ago when I was reading about it, they were at odds with each other. They weren't
I think that's
along.
Still the case. Mm. I think you can take them as allies, though, because they're under an order.
Yeah,
still.
They are part of order. I mean, somehow the dark elves are also in order.
But actually, I think there may be a restriction with Sylvaneth, or at least there was at one point. Don't quote me. That's something you can leave in the comments, how wrong I am about the Sylvaneth and was it Wanderer lore?
I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, there we go. We'll solve that issue next week.
Sounds good.
We'll get back to tactics and army list and cool strategies and stuff pretty soon. But this has just been a heck of a lot to talk about in the last week and a half or so from the Warhammer community stuff. And I've actually been delighted to talk about it. There isn't anything here that I'm not excited about. I mean, maybe not. Like, I don't play the Stormcast, but I'm really excited to see what the new edition brings. And I'm incredibly excited about the Soulblight folks.
I don't play Stormcast. But I might.
Could soon.
Well, it takes one trip.
Tugging at my heartstrings a little bit there.
Just one good starter set away from playing Stormcast again.
My arm is so rubbery. Just twist it so good.
Y'all got anything else you want to throw in here? We have covered just about all in the kitchen sink.
I'm just really excited for all of the new stuff that's coming out. All these sculpts look amazing, and I think GW's killing it, really.
Yes, well, we'll wrap up there. We'll be back next week. Next week, promise, we'll tell you how to beat Drakkari.
Wow. Jesus.
That's a big all one.
All right. I'll call all my friends, see how many games I can get.
quick, Google how to beat Drakkari.
Isn't it chain swords and bolt pistols?
Apparently.
It's apparently. Heavy bolters, but I mean, come on.
Okay.
All right, we'll see y'all next week.
See ya.
Bye,
everybody.
Scan is clear. I think they're gone. For now.